And welcome, Audio Chokers, to the podcast known as The Audio Choke here at MMATorch.com. Download us on iTunes for free. You can leave a comment below here at MMATorch.com. Go to the forum, start up a conversation. This week, Ken Shamrock is old, Jake Shields is in the UFC, and there's some Strike Force on Friday. Good night!
Yeah, I think we can go home now. Later, guys.
It's basically the show.
I'm Greg Rowland.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
Matt Collins.
Bye.
Yeah, that was really it, right? That's all we got.
All right, now we'll memento this. Go backwards.
Oh, are we doing this Reservoir Dogs style?
Yeah, just out of order.
You know,
just go to select scenes.
Parts and pieces.
So, what does it say when the biggest MMA event of the weekend is a card featuring washed-up UFC fighters in Australia?
It must mean that Strike Force is back on.
Not Strike Force, it was Impact FC.
Back FC's on. I don't know. Who is it? Yeah.
Yeah, just some organization that's doing the tour of ridiculous Australian shows. They've got like three shows where there's a handful of big names from the 90s and some more recent ones.
Oh, so we're talking about Ken Shamrock being old? Is that where we're going
with this? Yeah, he main evented against Pedro Hizo, right? And
was that the main event? I mean, I guess it probably was.
I know it was on the posters and everything. I think it was the main event, which is because,
there was actually several more relevant fighters on the card. Daly fought the same show.
Yeah. As far as markability goes or name value, I guess Ken Shamrock still is out there. What value he brings as a fighter is minimal, but he does have that name value still, or name recognition at least.
Well, and anyone who followed mixed martial arts during what was actually, the dark ages of the sport would know Pedro Hizo. He never won the UFC title, but he was real close to that for a significant period of time. And, while he doesn't have necessarily a whole lot of name recognition for the modern mixed martial arts fan of the Ultimate Fighter generation, for the people who've been around for a while, he certainly holds a lot of name value.
Yeah, most definitely. But it was, you can find that, I think the fight's floating around, or at least the end of the fight's floating around on YouTube. I mean, Ken Shamrock, I don't think many people are clamoring to see him fight, I think, at all these days. But, he went in there and took his medicine and then, lost, right? That was basically it.
Got punched in the face, kicked in the leg, took his paycheck, and went home.
Yeah, and it was interesting, just kind of looking around at different sites online and stuff, a lot of the questions are kind of out there, like, why is Ken Shamrock still fighting? And a lot of the response has been, it seems like, people saying, he lost that lawsuit to the UFC recently, where he was trying to sue them for a lot of money, and now he has to pay back the court fees. So maybe he really is in need of the cash from the fights he can still get. Because certainly he's in his mid to late 40s at this point, I believe. And
I think he's around the same age as Randy Couture, who's 46, 47.
But has definitely aged better. Randy Couture has.
So. Yeah, well, Randy Couture has evolved as a mixed martial artist, while Ken Shamrock is essentially the same guy who fought back in 1993. In terms of relevance, Randy Couture is certainly leap years ahead of Ken, but Ken has a better hairline.
That's true. They probably both use Just for Men, I would imagine, at this point.
At this point, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
But I don't see any reason why Ken Shamrock would be fighting at this point other than for money, and that's kind of well documented in sports in general. Some guys just go past their prime and didn't handle the money well earlier. I don't know if that's the case specifically with Shamrock, but him having to pay back the court fees for that UFC issue could be a factor. I don't know. Other than that, some guys don't know when to quit, can't bow out gracefully. Who knows?
Yeah, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was a combination of the two. But also, Ken Shamrock does at least have that name value where he is still worth something, even though he's fairly worthless as a fighter. He's worth something as a draw, and he still probably commands a decent paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
He probably got paid more than just about anyone else on that card, I'd imagine. So, if you pay somebody enough to take brain damage, people will probably do it, especially if they're used to doing it anyway.
Right, and that's a good point. And I guess the question then becomes like, how long do people want to see that?
Until if he does this for long enough, then people are going to go and see him, like, die in the ring, you know. Then
you people
then
are sick.
Now we're, like, edging into, like, the more morbid, you know, fandom of Ken Shamrock. Like, how badly is he going to lose this time? Mm. How much of a fool is he going to look like, at least in our eyes? I mean, he's a better man than I. I can't go do that. But I can still, you know, talk plenty of S about him, you know, behind his back and on the Internet.
But you never fought. You don't know what you're talking about, Matt Collins.
You get a guy like Dan Severn, and he's still fighting as far as I know. Or he was, at least at last I checked. He's older than Ken Shamrock. He loses plenty, although he wins plenty, too, but that's just because he fights people at, you know, he's scraping the bottom of the barrel in terms of people to fight against. But I doubt he commands a whole lot of a paycheck, because even though, you know, he does have a name from back in the day, he doesn't have nearly the name that Ken Shamrock does. We never hear about it when Dan Severn fights anybody.
Right.
He just does. The only reason you know that is because you go on SureDog and look at it. Ken Shamrock, though, every time he's got a fight, you know, it pops up. The MMA circles always talk about it. So he's at least got something going on for him there.
Oh, I think that's definitely his ability to promote himself and, you know, talk a good game, whether it's, you know, generating positive or negative press. He gets his name in the press and makes all kinds of claims that get him a lot of attention.
And he was just on HDNet or something like that, talking about doing steroids recently?
Yeah, within the last month or two, I know there's, you know, somewhat recently, and they kind of build it, you know, like, oh, UFC Hall of Famer admits to steroid use, and it was Ken Shamrock, and no one was surprised.
Yeah, well, he had an autobiography several years ago in which he admitted to it. He talked about using it in his pro wrestling years. I don't know that he had admitted to it in his mixed martial arts career, but he also tested positive for steroids about a year ago when he fought that really big dude. Guy escapes my name right now. But
yeah, no, that was just like within the last year or two. He was actually served a 1-year suspension for that. So, it's pretty crazy. But, it was really weird because I know, like, after the fight, he got on the mic and said, you know, I'll keep getting beat up, and, you know, as long as people keep coming to watch, and got a big cheer and stuff. And you're like,
oh,
you're contributing
good
to the Ken Shamrock Death Fund is what those people are doing. I mean, because certainly, you know, I don't think he's shown, like, aside from just not being a quality fighter anymore, you know, he can still make sentences and stuff. I mean, certainly if you look at boxing or other contact sports that have kind of, you know, like, you know, you see, you know, competitors after a while just, like, have bad physical side effects. They can't walk. They can't talk. And certainly I do expect that to happen with certain MMA fighters. I know Gary Goodridge is always a name that comes up, just someone who just has not aged well in the sport. I mean, like, physically, he's taken a lot of abuse, that sort of thing. And we haven't seen that in Shamrock's case yet, but it's really, for me, it just kind of seems like it's just a matter of time. Like, when is that last hit going to be the one that, you know, puts him over the edge? When's it going to be enough, I guess?
Well, you know, in Shamrock's case, I can almost see an exception to this where he can continue doing this for a long time without having, like, the Muhammad Ali syndrome necessarily, because he tends to lose in the first round. So he doesn't really take that much abuse in his fights.
It's just one punch and he's done. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a few punches to the face and he goes down and then they finish him off. And then, you know, he trains at the Lion's Den still, so it's not like he's getting his ass handed to him in the gym either. So you know what? You know, the guy's probably taking 6 punches every year to the face. And while it's still 6 more punches than a 47-year-old probably should be taking, it's not like he's taking the sustained abuse that, say, you know, maybe Gary Goodridge or a guy like perhaps Nogueira could be taking. And I think that a guy like him might be much more prone to this if he's continues fighting as he gets old.
Right. And I guess something to pick up from that is definitely the quality of competition, too. I mean, Ken Shamrock's not going in there against world beaters, whereas like a Nogueira, like you mentioned, is still a competitive fighter. And, you know, he's really, you know, shown his age in the sport on his face. I mean, he takes a beating and, you know, really pulls out the wins. But, you know, he's fighting much higher level competition, whereas, like, you know, Ken Shamrock, I guess the risk is lower-ish. Like, it doesn't look any better. You know, he still gets beat up and people are like, oh, he lost again. But, you know, the sustained amount of damage, you know, who's to say? And yeah, just looking at his record, I mean, his last, well, dating back to 2004, all of his fights since then have ended in the first round, win or loss.
Wow. But he did get that one win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he beat, let's see, looking back over his career since 2004, his last, he had the win over Chemo, the rematch at UFC 48. I don't know if that was a rematch.
They fought at like UFC 8 or something.
Yeah. Had a win over Chemo, then, you know, took multiple losses in a row, losing to Rich Franklin, Sakuraba, Ortiz twice. Robert Barry, Ross Clift. Beat Ross Clifton. That was last year.
And that was the one he got popped on steroids for.
Yeah, and then this most recent loss, Pedro Hizo. And yeah, all of those fights ended in the first round. So.
Pink Abbott also got a win on that same show.
Oh, that was
ridiculous. Like, where did they fight in these guys to fight Tank and Ken? Were they both
down
in
a bar?
Yeah,
they're just hanging out together, you know.
Yeah,
but man, who would have thought in 2010 we'd be opening the show with Ken Shamrock talk, huh?
Mm.
But, I mean, that's just what kind of week it's been in MMA. I mean, this whole month, you know, a couple months prior, it's been crazy. Next month's going to be nuts, more MMA, and then this week, it's just this last couple weeks, just been like, yeah. So Ken Shamrock's not dead yet.
Yeah, and Jake Shields, the biggest news that nobody cares about.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. I know Bloody Elbow had a headline, you know, like, it's official. It sounds like Jake Shields on his Twitter page confirmed that he has been signed with the UFC, right?
Yeah.
Sounds like he'll be fighting Martin Kampman.
It should be an interesting fight.
Yeah.
But, not necessarily the most exciting fight,
yeah.
But in terms of rankings and, like, yeah. Where he fits in the division, it's very important, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, because certainly I saw a headline over on Bloody Elbow, kind of that idea. It's like, oh, you know, Jake Shields goes to the UFC, who cares, type of deal. In that vein, I don't think that was
yeah, no, that's where I got the inspiration
yeah, yeah.
from. Yeah.
But it was just that idea that, I mean, for the hardcore fans, like you mentioned, Greg, the rankings, you know, it's a top-level content. I believe he's going to be fighting at welterweight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where Martin Kampman is.
A top-10 fighter, you know, going to the UFC, kind of testing the deep waters, as it were, you know, have multiple quality opponents to fight. And for the hardcores, that's great. You know, we get to see, you know, a champion from Strikeforce come over and see how he'd fare in the UFC. But, I mean, as far as name value goes, yeah, he's been on CBS where, you know, like the, you know, mouth breather, you know, American Idol fans got to see him and saw him win boring decisions over Dan Henderson and Mayhem Miller. So, you know, who knows how that translates.
Yeah, and I wouldn't expect a hugely exciting fight because he's really, you know, he's not an exciting fighter. He's a very effective fighter,
yes,
but not very exciting. Martin Kampman is certainly more interesting, so I think it will be, you know, whoever is able to control the way that the action goes is going to determine whether or not you fall asleep in that fight. But yeah, it's certainly, you know, whoever wins that is probably going to be in line for a shot at the winner of George St. Pierre and Josh Koscheck.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea because I know, what was it? I mean, certainly Strikeforce has a long way to go before it, you know, is established as a solid number two. I mean, it's really only been about a year, a little bit more, since it's been on the main stage, having the Showtime, CBS deals and such, before that being regional. But, you know, compared to, like, when Pride got bought out by the UFC and you had, the you know, Dan Henderson basically coming in. And I don't know if he got an immediate title shot, but basically...
He got two immediate title
yeah.
shots.
That's right. But, you know, just having the champion just walk in and get a title shot. And I don't know, being a Strikeforce champion just doesn't have that kind of weight behind it yet, if it ever will. And certainly, you know, I think, you know, I'm just totally spaced out on his name, Jake Shields. That's how, it's been one of those days. Jake Shields could certainly be competitive, I think, you know, top five in the welterweight division and, you know, maybe even against George St. Pierre. But, you know, I just don't think he doesn't have that, you know, credibility among the UFC audience to just walk in and get a title shot.
Looks like a win-win for the UFC. Mm-hmm. You know, if he goes in there and loses, then, you know, that's even better for the UFC. Like, well, we brought this guy over from Brand X, and look how he, you know, turned out.
Brand X's best fighter could beat our guy.
Like how they shipped off Dan Henderson.
Yeah. Or if he wins, and they're like, we've got the best eye for talent around there. You know, come on over, Brand X guys, and you'll have a much brighter future over here. You know, it's a win-win.
You know what's weird, though, is Jake Shields is totally in the Strikeforce, EA MMA video game, and I thought Dana White said people who were in that game would never be in the UFC.
Well, he's also said the same thing about people in the IFL, and you know, we've got a handful of IFL fighters in the UFC now. Roy Nelson, Krzysztof Szyszynski, and I'm forgetting the big guy, the champion for some reason. His name is he just fought Gilbert Ivel.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm
Ben Rothwell.
Ben
that's
Rothwell,
his name.
Big Ben. Yeah.
Yeah.
You already said Roy Nelson. I'm like, yeah, big guys. Okay.
Big guy. Yeah,
yeah,
got
so
it.
They've already gotten a handful of guys from the IFL. You know, Dana White, I think he says some things kind of half meaning it, half out of intimidation.
A little hyperbole every once in a while.
I mean, you look at the IFL thing, and out of all of the guys in the IFL, if only three of them made it, maybe, you know, going to the IFL is maybe, say, let's. A risk, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you want to go to the IFL, you better do damn good, otherwise I'm not signing you, kind of deal. I could see how he's kind of got that deal. And you know, Randy Couture is in the EA game, and you know, he's back in the UFC also. So, I mean, Dana White always seems to make exceptions whenever he makes one of these lines. One thing you mentioned, though, how Jake Shields doesn't have the credibility with the UFC fans. Well, he's never fought in the UFC yet to earn that. He does have some wins over a handful of high-level guys who have fought in the UFC. He's got a win over Thiago Alves, I believe, and one over Paul Daly. So, I mean, Paul Daly no longer in the UFC, but those are some guys who were looking really well up until their last fights, where they both lost their last fights. But high-ranked guys, and he's got some wins over him. So if nothing else, that's something that the UFC can hype up.
Oh, yeah, certainly. I mean, yeah, you just kind of look at his record. Dan Henderson, Jason Miller, Robbie Lawler, Paul Daly, Nick Thompson, Mike Pyle, you know, just going back for a while. Got a win over Carlos Condit. Yushin Okami he beat. I mean, so plenty of guys out there that he's beaten. So, I mean, certainly, you know, in his first fight on the UFC, I'm sure they'll run down a lot of those names just to build familiarity. I guess it's more of a familiarity thing than anything else. And
yeah.
They're always going to, I mean, you know, you look at Anderson Silva's debut. I mean, he certainly could have, you know, debuted against someone at a higher level than Chris Leben, but they wanted to give him someone who he would blast.
Yeah. I think that was a great choice of a first fight for Anderson Silva because that fight was awesome.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I mean, they still use those highlights. And this, I don't think that's what they're doing with Jake Shields. I mean, clearly Martin Campman is a top 10 welterweight, and you know he's been in the mix, seemingly a fight or two away from you know maybe earning a title shot eventually. And yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people are surprised with what Campman had to offer on the ground in his last fight against Paulo Thiago. And certainly, I think Jake Shields is a higher level ground guy. You know, really great jiu-jitsu and good wrestling and all that. But he's also susceptible to people who punch him hard in the face.
Yeah. So. Well, I think the big story on that fight is whether or not Shields gets the takedown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, they're both good on the ground. I think Shields has the edge there, and he certainly got the edge in the wrestling. So, I mean, if the fight's on the ground, he's probably going to be the one on top. But Campman, I think, is going to have a big advantage in the striking department.
Yeah, and it's looking like according to a lot of reports going on around the internet. Looks like that's going to be taking place at UFC 121. Be the same card as Lesnar and Cain Velasquez. So October 23rd in California.
Nice.
Sounds good. So Strikeforce Challengers card coming up?
Yes, there is on Friday. Let me click an internet page so I can see what fights are on there. Aside from, I know the Sarah Kaufman defending her title against Roxanne Modafferi, and you know a main event not featuring a title fight, which is, you know.
But it's got that big up-and-comer, Del Rosario.
Yes, let me pull it up here. Yeah, Shane Del Rosario. I think I say his name different every time, but.
Then keep it going like that.
Yes.
Yeah,
but,
see, now we're going to put you to pressure to,
yeah, exactly.
to say it different every time.
Okay, now I'm not actually sure, looking at the different reports, whether it's what's going to be the main event. But, yeah, it's featuring Sarah Coffin versus Roxanne Modafferi. And then Shane Del Rosario versus Lolahia Mahi. I say his name wrong, slash different every time as well. Ron Humphrey versus Mike Kyle. And, you know, some other people on that card that people may or may not recognize. Corey Davala, and Bobby Volker. A few other guys. But, you know, we've been over the Strikeforce Challengers. It's kind of like they're up and coming, you know, kind of like a Fight Night-ish type card. So, you know, some prospects to keep an eye out for, but, you know. And, you know, usually one or two somewhat more recognizable name fights. But, you know, the one fights I'm really looking for here are, you know, it'd be interesting to see what Del Rosario can do, you know, looking at his record. I believe he's undefeated. And he had long been kind of rumored as a potential opponent for Bobby Lashley, and there's, you know, all kinds of behind-the-scenes stuff in Strikeforce. You know, like, no, did Lashley's kind of turn that fight down? Were they not interested in him fighting Del Rosario? So kind of interesting there. But, yeah, Del Rosario is 9-0. His last win coming at Strikeforce Challengers 4 back in November of last year, beat Brandon Cash with a omoplata.
Ooh.
You know,
don't see that too often.
Yeah, almost all but one of his fights have ended in the first round.
And he's a heavyweight, right?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes, he's a heavyweight. 7 wins by TKO or knockout, 2 wins by submission. And, yeah, all but one of his fights ended in the first round. So.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, and he's taken on, like I said, Lolahia Mahi. He's a big guy and he punches hard. From what I saw him on one other Strikeforce Challengers card, he took a loss to LeVar Johnson. That was back in March, and it was I think I talked about this a little bit on our last podcast. But it was basically kind of like an old school heavyweight match where it was just two big guys who punched each other a lot until they both got really tired, and then one person got more tired and fell over. So it wasn't like I didn't take away a lot from that fight from either guy other than like, hey, those guys punch hard.
Yeah, and then they get tired.
Right, but I think that's the kind of fight if you do have a prospect, you know, you want to put them in against someone who punches. You know, you don't want to give them a can. You don't want to give them someone they can just walk over. But, you know, give them someone who does have at least one solid skill set. You're like, hey, this guy punches really hard. He'll have to adapt his game plan to not get punched really hard in the face and see how he handles that. So hopefully we'll see. But, yeah, looking at Mahi's record, lost to LeVar Johnson, a win back in 2009, last year. In June. Before that, he's had a draw with Scott Junk, who was on the heavyweight season of The Ultimate Fighter, I think.
Yes. Yes, he was. Season 10. He he lost to Matt Mitrione in that fight.
Yeah, so not a lot to take away there. But again, it's the Strikeforce up-and-comers card. So yeah, we'll see. I don't expect that to be a very pretty fight. And I don't expect it to go the distance either, so... It's really hard to predict a lot of these fights, for me at least, because, you know, like, I recognize three or four names on the card, and, you know, if I've seen more than one of those people fight before, then I'm really lucky.
Yeah, but like, then it's really exciting, though, because you don't know really what's going on, you know? Like, there can be a point where you overanalyze fights a little bit too much. Perhaps the Shane Carwin, the Brock Lesnar got a little over.
But that gave us like 2 hours of quality.
Thank you. Yeah, it was great for us. Yeah.
Yeah, if you need something to say, you know, it's nice to know that stuff. But in terms of just watching it, I think is what Matt's getting at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can just kind of turn your brain off and enjoy instead of, you know, trying to like, am I going to be right? Am I going to be right?
Get How's your scorecard out, you know, you're like, okay, well, I predicted this would end in the third round by da-da-da-da-da. Yep, okay. Yeah, definitely interesting.
And Strikeforce has had a pretty good run, you know, like recently, and I'm thinking that perhaps, hopefully, they'll just keep this momentum going.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I mean, they definitely get a lot of grief from certain people because, you know, they don't air their prelims, blah, 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 and certainly that's bothersome as a fan, from a fan's perspective. And it really seems like they get a lot of grief for their CBS cards. And since that CBS card they had several months ago, which kind of got panned by a lot of people because like five round decision,
yeah,
like,
well,
every fight,
it didn't work out. It was bad. Ooh. Yeah.
And then they had a fight at the end. It was awesome. But but since then they've really put together some pretty quality cards. And I mean, we had like probably the most shocking upset of the year on one of their cards, and you know, a fight no one really was excited about before. So you know, as much bad things as. Incredible bad things you can say about Strikeforce and their matchmaking and Showtime and, you know, how that's all going together. I mean, so far, so good, at least. You know, it's not, like, amazing, but they're doing pretty well for what they have, for sure.
Yeah, they're doing pretty decent. That that second CBS card certainly bombed, but their first one was a good enough show. I mean, the Jake Shields fight was still fairly lackluster, but at least it had Mayhem entertaining it up a little bit, and it had a little more drama than the Jake Shields Dan Henderson fight did. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, Strikeforce has been doing at least pretty good, assuming they can hold on to that CBS slot, which I don't really know what's up with that. I remember after that second show, people were talking about how, oh, you know, CBS is not going to be wanting to do another show after this because they ran over their time slot and they had all these decisions that were, you know, fairly boring for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how are they going to hold on to this when it's on broadcast TV, which is still kind of touch and go when it comes to MMA. They haven't really committed to it. They haven't really done a whole lot of advertising for it, and they haven't really had a whole lot of proven success outside of Kimbo Slice being on there.
Yeah, back in the good old Elite XC days, and I mean, that was like, those were their basically the best MMA fight ratings ever were Kimbo Slice fights, which is kind of insane.
It's kind of sad.
Makes you a little sad on the inside.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, getting back to the Strikeforce card, and I was talking about, you know, just being familiar with fighters. And, you know, on this card, the fighters I'm most familiar with are Sarah Coffin and Roxanne Modafferi, who are fighting for the women's welterweight title. Sarah Coffin is defending. She's coming off of, I think, a five-round decision win at a previous challenger's card. And that one was kind of, that was a pretty not exciting fight. I think a lot of people were just kind of surprised she didn't finish her opponent, Takeo Hashi. Took her to a decision in Strikeforce Challengers 6 back in February. But that was a fight where she was clearly winning the fight. You know, she was stuffing the takedowns for the most part, that sort of thing. And really just, you know, clearly, I believe won every... You could easily make the argument she won every round. You know, it wasn't really that close, but she didn't finish. And, you know, we've talked about this before with all kinds of champs in the UFC, that sort of thing. does a champ or does a fighter need to finish if they get the win? Isn't that enough? But it was just one of those things. I think that comes up more with female MMA in general, just because it's. I mean, I think among hardcore fans, it's not an issue at all. But like for a lot of other people, who are just kind of newish to the sport, female MMA is still kind of a novelty. Almost.
And then a boring female fight is just poison to them.
Right,
know?
Like it seems kind of silly. Like if you saw a boring MMA fight, just a regular man's MMA fight, you would be like, oh, is this the end of MMA? They had a boring fight. Can they sustain having boring fights all the time? And you know, I mean, look how far MMA's come in like the past 10 years, something like that. I mean, there were terrible fights on early on. And so I think female MMA is going through those same growing pains. And yeah, I don't think one boring fight is a deal breaker or anything. I could see how it doesn't help ratings, that sort of thing. But, you know, it's part of the game.
And most of them have been, you know, relatively good.
Yeah, I mean, for a while, yeah. Women's MMA was really kind of getting the, being promoted as, and rightfully so, you know, like, hey, these are the kind of the show stealers, you know, whether it was an Elite XC or Strikeforce, because, you know, whether it was like the women felt they had more to prove or whatever, but they just, you know, they came out and really put on really impressive fights for the most part.
Yeah.
And, you know, you say what you want about Sarah Coffin's last fight. I mean, it was impressive the way she dominated her opponent, even though she didn't finish. And with Roxanne Modafari, she's got a pretty legit contender. Modafari, I believe I mentioned on the last podcast, coming off of a split decision win over Tara LaRosa, who widely considered one of the top female mixed martial artists. You know, she just hasn't been around Strikeforce or Elite XC before that because of she regularly fights at like 125, which is not one of the two weight classes Strikeforce has.
Mm-hmm.
So, but no, it's a pretty interesting fight. Roxanne Modafari, she's definitely one of those fighters who does not look like a fighter. She's a nerd, got glasses, rocks the look hard, and, you know, it's kind of funny, you know, reading about her, reading interviews with her, that sort of thing. I mean, she's just one of those people you're like, of all the people I think would be a fighter, based on stereotypical appearances, I would not go with her. But she's got very, very solid ground skills. Four of her wins... four of her 15 wins coming off a submission, 10 decisions, one TKO, and like I said, that split decision just a couple months ago at the Moosin card, which featured Tim Sylvia chopping down the strongman.
Mm.
She took that split decision over Tara LaRosa, which was a rematch from several years ago, I believe. So, I don't know. I like Sarah Coffin in this fight. What really stands out about her to me is, I mean, she's got... really, really solid crisp stand-up, which I think it's just part of like the growth and evolution of women's MMA. You don't see a lot of that yet, you know. We got like, you know, Chris Cyborg who has devastating stand-up, but it's really sloppy. Where Sarah Coffin is really, I mean, she's got really clean stand-up and has good power. She's got, you know, plenty of knockouts, I believe, on her and finishes on her record. But just in her last few fights, she's been getting taken to decisions, that sort of thing. But, no, it was a really fun fight. If Modafari can get to the ground, I'd be really interested to see what happens. I know Coffin had a little bit of issues with Misha Tate, who's a pretty good wrestler and was able to take her down, but still ended up taking a decision over Tate. So we'll see. Like, I don't know. It's
looking forward to it. Yeah, like, one day when there's, like, an all-woman card, you know?
There's been a few of those back... But, yeah, I mean, like, of the few all-women's card that's been, like, you gotta like, find those on, like, Amazon.com or, like, you know...
Yeah.
They're hard to track down. Like, it's... And, like, even in Strikeforce, which is, like, you know, kind of being billed as, like, the promoter of women's MMA, I mean, they don't even have a women's fight on every card yet, so... And Bellator is going to be doing a women's tournament next season, so
ooh.
A little bit of competition there, but it's I believe a different weight class. But it is nice to see, you know, more women's MMA.
I say you
good.
Go get them, ladies.
Yeah,
you do that.
You beat each other up.
Yeah,
and we're gonna watch and eat some popcorn.
Except for Matt Hughes and Dana White.
They don't like that.
They're not into that stuff.
Well, I knew Dana White wasn't. That's actually why there's no women's fights in the UFC. Dana White's just not into it. I was unfamiliar with the Matt Hughes comment.
Yeah,
there.
I believe Matt Hughes is one of the several fighters or people involved in MMA. Just like, you know, as a man, I'm not interested in watching women get beat up, that sort of thing. So, and to each his own, whatever.
Mm-hmm. So, nothing wrong with that. What else we got?
Yeah, no, that's it. That's
okay.
All I got. No, I mean, again, with the Strikeforce Challengers card, it's really a lot of people, like sometimes even hardcore fans just haven't heard of. But no, the other notable name on there is Ron Obongo Humphrey.
Obongo!
Believe it or not, that's his nickname.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah.
I was hoping that was his middle name.
He's got great rhythm, man.
But he is, I believe he'd recently dropped down to 205. He had previously fought at heavyweight. Mm. Some listeners might remember him as the guy who got kneed to death by Brett Rogers, basically, back
But he's okay
year.
Now.
Right. Yeah, he got better.
Okay, he good. Got better. That was good.
Yeah.
I was worried there.
But and that was his sole loss, was to Brett Rogers back in March, April. I'm bad at math.
Yeah, a little
April,
bit ago.
April of last year on the Shamrock Diaz card for Strikeforce. Since then, he's taken a win over George Bush, not the president,
oh,
the fighter.
Bummer.
I know, at a Strikeforce card earlier this year. And, you know, he's got to get, you know, he's only 7-1, so kind of up-and-comer, and I don't know if he'd how big of a prospect he is, anything like that, but it definitely looked a lot better dropping down to 205 than he was when he was fighting at heavyweight. So keep an eye on him. And
with a name like Obongo, it's going to be hard to forget.
Yeah, and he's taken on Mike Kyle. So.
Oh, good. I hope Obongo wins.
Obongo, yeah.
Not a fan of Mike Kyle.
Not so much, huh?
Nah.
Yeah, and he's Mike Kyle rocking a 16-7-1 record. So.
16-7-1?
Yes.
Wow. Wait a minute, that can't be right.
You might be thinking of Mike Pyle? Let's see here.
I don't think so. I'm thinking of a guy who got knocked out by Justin Eilers and got submitted by Fabricio Werdum.
Yeah, he definitely got submitted by Fabricio Werdum. But, his Sherdog record is at 16-7-1. So.
Crazy.
Yeah.
What the heck?
But, I mean, that's the kind of... And certainly there's been some pretty bad mismatches on the Strikeforce Challengers card. Matt Lindland, Kevin Casey. I don't know why that fight happened. But you know, fights like this, just from a kind of pretty broad or kind of shallow view, I mean, you know, if you have a prospect and you're just going to put him in against someone who has, you know, like a Mike Kyle who has a 16-7-1 record, you know, he's not a world beater, but he's got a decent experience at least. So, you know, even if he's not like, you know, going to be someone you want to keep around your organization long term, you know, give him some fights against some guys you're interested in trying to develop, you know. Have these, I don't want to say journeymen necessarily, but have these veterans, you know, who have had, you know, fight experience, win or loss, you know, and a longer career, get in there with some of the newer guys.
It's always a good idea.
And that's all I got to say about that. All
right.
Oh, yeah. So,
What else happened in MMA this week or last week?
I don't think anything, but right on the spot right now, Fedor versus Brock Lesnar, who wins?
Oh... Fedor, flying decapitation.
You're wrong. Brock Lesnar by ground and pound.
Okay.
Second round.
Matt, break the tie.
I don't know. I guess I'd probably give it to Fedor.
Paul Heyman with the steel chair. What?
Thank you. I'll take the easy way out.
Yeah. Interesting.
Where'd that come from?
Nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
We just needed stuff to talk about.
Just why not? Yeah.
Throw out fantasy matchups.
Yeah.
Call
them.
Yeah. No, the other thing I saw, I think it was reported last Friday or something like that, but the owners of K1 and Dream basically got some more money. So now they're not on the verge of not having shows anymore.
So was K1 on the verge of going bankrupt?
I believe just their ratings have been down. That sort of, like, they just haven't been doing as well as they had been, you know, within the past several years. I don't know if it was a near bankruptcy thing, but I don't think they were doing phenomenal.
Hmm. I would have thought with the collapse of Pride, they would have had more ratings. But then again, it could be like with the WWF and WCW, where the two of them were doing great when they were fighting each other, and then once one of them died, the other one has just kind of stagnated since then.
Right, and I think one of the issues has just kind of been the decline of mixed martial arts popularity, perhaps, in the Asian markets since the fall of Pride, and you know, who knows what's that necessarily related to, but I mean, yeah, it's just like their shows, you know, in general shows that just haven't really been selling as well. We haven't seen, you know, like the rocketing, you know, TV ratings, but I believe it was a bank or some sort of financial company basically infusing like 12 million, not 12 million, that's totally the wrong number, several million dollars, to basically get K1 and Dream back up and going.
Oh, well, that's cool.
You know, get some more fights. And I think really the thing is they're, you know, offering kind of more lucrative contracts to fighters. Maybe get some kind of, I don't know how many name free agents are out there, but, you know, get some more, you know, well-respected or well-known MMA fighters, you know, to come over and fight fight over, you know, overseas, whereas, you know, a lot of, like, the market is really, it's an American market at this point.
Yeah. Well, K-1, specifically, more than Dream, is, I mean, K-1 is primarily a kickboxing organization.
So maybe they just want more money to throw at Alistair or Overeem.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, I don't know that they have a whole lot of competition for the guys that are fighting in K-1. Mm-hmm. I mean, if, you know, if Semi Schilt wants to leave K-1, where the hell is he going to go, you know? There's nowhere else really that, at least as far as I know. I mean, there could be some good organizations. I know that kickboxing is pretty popular in a lot of Europe, mm-hmm. so, I mean, there might be something over there. But as far as I'm aware, you know, K-1's pretty much the big show there, much like the way UFC is the big show for mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
If they're going to funnel all the money into Dream, that would make sense in terms of trying to buy up fighters. One thing that I was kind of hearing about was how this was kind of a move to get into China, which I'm not really sure how that works. I don't know if this bank has any affiliation with the Chinese government, because I know that in terms of doing stuff in China, you know, you got to have permission with the government in order to run anything because they're, you know, like semi-communist. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not. It's just kind of some of the rumor mill. But then again, that was also supposed to be part of what the UFC deal with the prince from Abu Dhabi was supposed to help get them into China. Which has yet to happen.
Right. But, yeah, there's some interesting... I was pulling up a website with some quotes from this press conference they had on Friday, and the internet basically took a giant dump. So I was looking for specifics and couldn't find anything. But, no, I got it now. But, yeah, there's basically involving about $230 million or so from a Shanghai investment bank.
So it is Chinese, then.
Yep.
Interesting.
From the FEG, which, you know, owns Dream and K-1. But basically there's this this quote, basically, like, this is a declaration of war against the UFC and the WWE, who are both trying to stake claims in the Asian market, basically.
Yeah.
So and from Asia we will take the world, that sort of thing.
That never works out in Risk.
Yeah. We won't stand a chance in the American market, so we will spread to the rest of the world. So that's kind of interesting. So don't expect, like, you know, the Asian invasion in the U.S., but look for them to actually try to make a more established name of MMA and K-1.
Well, you know what that tells me is that the big battleground is going to be Europe. Because the UFC has certainly been, you know, doing a lot of shows in Europe lately and has always been looking to expand that. And if, you know, they're looking at starting in Asia and moving westward, I could see that being the big battleground is all over Europe.
Yeah.
Which should be good for those guys. Means a lot of tape-delayed shows for us, though.
Yeah. Get ready to be up at 3 a.m. on HDNet, man. But, yeah, I mean, and it's really hard to say at this point. I mean, people say crazy stuff all the time. I mean, Affliction was going to be huge. Donald Trump was involved. You guys remember WAMA?
Yeah. Well, as far as I know, WAMA still exists. I mean, all they are is a company with a belt.
I think they might have died a slow, painful death. But, yeah, basically, like, you know, these grand ideas of, you know, like, oh, offer some real competition, or we're going to infuse the MMA marketplace with this and this and this. And, you know, as fans, you know, competition's great, but you really got to give it some time to see if it comes to fruition, that sort of thing. But, yeah, no, I mean, if this is what it takes to kind of reanimate, you know, Japanese, Asian MMA, you know, get it back into the limelight, or at least, you know, get it some more attention outside of the 3 a.m. HDNet crowd, you know, I'm all for it. So, I'll be interested to see. I don't know if Dana White or Vince McMahon, for that matter, have come back with any responses to the declaration of war against them.
Well, I'm sure Dana White will have a thing or two to say about that,
yeah.
Knowing him.
So, it's gonna get next UFC press conference. Someone's gonna bring it up, I'm sure. So,
oh yeah,
Dana White's pretty good at generating quotes.
I think it's interesting that they declared war on the WWE. I wonder if they are aware that the WWE is a fake product.
Right. I think so. I think it is really just like the marketplace, and the WWE has, in the past, had pretty successful ventures into some Asian markets, and they've really been expanding, you know, huge kind of overseas. I mean, really, that's where a lot of their market is these days. You know, whether it's, you know, I think they even have shows on, you know, like TV deals all over the world, in the Middle East, Philippines, all kinds of places, and I think, you know...
Well, nobody's watching them here now.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. You know, that's where they make a lot of their money. nowadays is from kind of like the foreign markets. So it's interesting. But, yeah, that kind of struck me as odd as they declared war against the WWE and UFC. You know, maybe focus on taking one giant down at a time. I don't know. But maybe we'll finally get the Dana White, Vince McMahon team up that Dana White and us have all been clamoring for. Because remember, Dana White is nothing if not a bald Vince McMahon with better knees.
Maybe a slightly better personality, you know, just barely. He's got a puke. Are you on a job? Throw up in front of me. Do it, dog.
Oh, I'm sure if Dana White could get a dollar out of it, he'd do it.
Yeah.
Well, excellent. All right, anything else we want to touch on? When's that a video game coming out?
The Strikeforce EA MMA?
Yeah.
October.
Oh.
So it'll be interesting to see how many. Maybe if Jake Shields does really well, he'll get a cover spot on the EA video game too, which would be great.
There'd be like three people on there.
Yeah.
Hey. You know, they could take Fatal Raph, just have it Randy Couture and Jake Shields.
Yeah.
They'd probably sell more copies of the game that way.
Just really trick people. Like, hey, UFC game, right? Oh, no!
No! It's still good, though. I just don't recognize any of these people.
I can fight in a ring? What?
Put stumps to the face?
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we're going to cut it short, everybody, because if we don't have anything to talk about, you know.
Yeah, we ran out of stuff to say.
All right. Well, it's been nice anyways, you know.
Yeah, get a little bit take a nap.
Yeah, mixed martial arts breaks and stuff like that, you know. So next week, we've got the rundown of the fighters card, or the
UFC
Strike Force.
Right, we'll wrap up the Strike Force card, and, you know, I'll maybe have an impression of some of the fighters I haven't heard of before. But, yeah, we'll actually get to...
stop hitting me!
Yeah, just like that. But, you know, I believe, yeah, the in 2 weeks, I believe it is the UFC on Versus, their second outing, August 1st, which is Sunday, headlined by John Jones and Vladimir Matryoshenko. So we'll have that to preview, and then, who knows, maybe... Ken Shamrock will have done something more crazy that we can talk about, or...
Well, we'll have to find out. Next week, tune in to the Audio Choke here at MMATorch.com. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Just type on in the Audio Choke, and you'll be able to hunt us down. Like always...
I'm Greg Rowland.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
And I'm Matt Collins. See you around.
Audio Choke.
So,
What else happened in MMA this week or last week?
I don't think anything.